Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Karen.
And I'm Paul. We know that stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the world of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
Many clinicians appreciate the value of specialist practice, but it remains poorly understood by some, and many clinicians struggle to articulate their work, its value and the benefit that it brings. Today, Paul and I are going to be exploring this important subject with Professor Alison Leary, the Chair of Healthcare and Workforce Modelling at London South Bank University, and also an independent healthcare consultant and researcher. She has a particular interest in workforce modelling and the work of specialist practice and its value. Hello, welcome. Lovely to have you both with us today.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Alison, thank you so much for joining us. I've been privileged to listen to you talk a number of times, and lots of the things you've said in the past when I was starting out as a nurse specialist really have driven me in my role as a stoma nurse. And so it is it's with thanks that I say I am where I am because of a lot of the things that you've said, your training, your teaching, and your guidance. So we are incredibly privileged to have you here today to join us. So thank you.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Right. Shall we get started then? Research has shown that specialist practice is valued by patients, has good outcomes, and offers value for money. But why do you think specialist nursing is an easy target when it comes to trust saving money?
I think one of the reasons it's an easy target is because quite often this work shows up on a spreadsheet. It doesn't always show up in strategic at board level. So specialist nurses, in fact, nurses generally, are just really good at going to work and getting on with their jobs. And they don't really talk about their work very much. And they don't talk about the complexity of their work. This means that people underestimate the work that they do and also underestimate the complexity of the work. And also the risk that they manage for organisations. So quite often when we talk about the work of people like clinical nurse specialists, it's as a frontline expert that improves safety, quality and efficiency for an organisation, as well as patient experience. But I think that because people are so busy, they don't always get time to put that message out to people that, you know, are influencing. There was an announcement by the health minister that effectively means cutting quite a lot of money out of the NHS, so about 4 billion from the budget. You know, we know that that's going to end up with us doing workforce reviews, because the biggest part of a spend for an organisation, whether it's a community trust or an NHS trust, is workforce.
Obviously, lots of nurse specialists were redeployed during the pandemic, but I think the repercussions, and I think that from talking to other nurse specialists, there is a fear that there are going to be long-term repercussions of that redeployment. So a lot of it is going to be about, again, almost reconfirming and reproving their worth as individual nurse specialists, but also as entire departments. And you mentioned things like they're like proving their worth and those sorts of things. So in your opinion, moving forward in this, in the short term, but then also looking for the longer term, what do you think nurse specialists need to be kind of looking at now as we're coming out of, starting to come out of the pandemic? Where should these specialist nurses be looking to say, right, this is what we need to do to start rebuilding my service and the reputation and continuing the excellent work that we do?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We've had lots of correspondence from specialist nurses who are either been redeployed or been doing two jobs or have been covering for lots of colleagues who've been redeployed. And services, there is a tremendous backlog, particularly in certain areas. So one of the reasons that I think specialist nurses are really important right now is clearing that backlog. So we know nurses not only provide care, but they also organise care. Nurses, unlike most of the other professional groups, nurses are sort of organisers of care from being students onwards. That's one of the things nurses are kind of, it's like their USP, their unique selling point. And I think that's what's needed now. So to get that flow back through the system, we're going to need people that are really good, very clinically focused organisers of care. It's like anything, actually. It's about being the solution rather than the problem. And specialist nurses are the solution to a fairly significant problem. But people need to know that.
I love that sentiment of being clinically focused organisers of care. And I think, you know, specialist practitioners are in that unique advantage point that they tend to look at the whole pathway and appreciate that for people. So, you know, rather than looking on that one individual episode of care, they can understand the impact and the whole flow and patient journey throughout the whole system, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we know that specialist nurses do really well is negotiate that, not only for patients, but also for other people that use the service. So we call them brokers. It's like they're the project managers or brokers of a pathway, because they do see all parts of the pathway and they know where the areas of risk are in those pathways as well. And that gives them a unique perspective, but also this angle of managing risk, which is really important to organisations and to patients.
Yeah, these clinical nurse specialists are pivotal in that organisational process. But one of the things we are not so good at, and I know it's been written about a lot of the times, and I know you know you've spoken about it, and we've, you know, you've got the whole of the Apollo website on it, is speaking up for your service. And it's actually that ability to be able to say, we don't just do anything. And I know one of the prime examples I say in this instance is when people say, you know, I had a chat with the patient, and it's like, no, you didn't have a chat with the patient. You provided essential and emotional psychological support during a potential time or an actual time of crisis. So we as nurses say, well, we had a chat. I didn't do anything special. No, you did. But it's how we as clinical nurse specialists, as practitioners, how can we show that? How can we show, you know, how can we make count what can't be counted?
If I could say one thing that nurses could do to change the way they're viewed, is to change the way they talk about their work. So just as a word I would ban, you'll hear words like basic care, which, you know, care of the acutely unwell is never basic, because people should always be on the lookout for deterioration. You know, what we think of as vigilance, what Florence Nightingale called vigilance. So I describe you as a vigilant profession, like air traffic control. The fact you're not doing, you know, operations or other technical work doesn't mean you're not doing work, and it doesn't mean you're not doing important work. So we tend to talk about vigilance. I'll talk about rescue work. I'll use more technical language generally to explain what you do. And I'll avoid words like basic or fundamental even, actually. I'll avoid words like advice and support as well. Because although you do give advice and support, pretty much anyone can give advice and support. So I will talk about psychological care. I will talk about negotiation. And I'll generally talk in a sort of a way that hopefully reflects the complexity of what you do. And I think by helping people understand that the work is complex, then it helps people understand the value of the work. Because what we can then link it to is better outcomes. So if you're more sort of specific about what you're doing, so we know, for example, in lung cancer, if a clinical nurse specialist is managing the pre-diagnostic and diagnostic pathway, people are more likely to get access to treatment. They're more likely to survive a year. So survival actually goes up if you have a CNS. And because we can understand those interventions, and we talk specifically about those interventions, it's much easier to link them to outcomes. And that's one of the things that people really need to think about.
That's a really important point. And I think it's such an important thing for specialist practitioners to be able to do that. Do you have any practical advice on how people can articulate that? Because it feels quite daunting. And it's like you say, if people are trapped in the doing of their job, how do they successfully articulate what they're doing? What advice would you give people?
So that's one of the reasons we've got Apollo. So Apollo, if you look at things like the job planner, it uses these words to talk about your work. If you click on the words, it'll define what the words mean as well. So even if you can't you know, you don't have the time to go and read all the literature and go and read Dreyfus and Dreyfus about what a proficient workforce looks like. And but you don't have to. What you can do is you can go on Apollo, you can do the job plan, and you can look at, you know, what vigilance means, what rescue means. Rescue work is a very big part of nursing work. Stopping bad things happening to people is a lot of what nurses do. And rescue work is linked to better outcomes. So making stuff happen when it should happen, stopping things happen that shouldn't happen, also an important one. You know, things like misprescribing, all sorts of things. And being able to talk about your work in that way, linking it directly to risk and directly to the organisation of care, helps people see its value.
We've mentioned the Apollo website there, and the link for Apollo and the Clonopoulos Professional website are in the episode notes.
It's that clash between proactive care and reactive care. And it's always been a big frustration of mine clinically that we're so focused on reactively treating people. Whereas as nurse specialists, we desperately want to be in a position to do that proactive care to prevent harm. Is that, again, another conflict that specialist practice has, that we're almost in, you know, the beans counted are the reactive care, but we need to be able to clearly articulate the proactive things that we've done?
Quite often the difference between proactive and reactive is workload. So it's basically competing priorities. So you've got the priorities of an organisation, which is rewarded for counting stuff. How many appointments, how many operations, you know, how many things are done. And then you've got the issue of workload. So we know that proactive management by clinical nurse specialists saves bed days across different specialisms. I mean, we've done about 70 evaluations on this. In areas like sickle cell, for example, we saw one organisation introduce a couple of community matrons for sickle cell and saved £100,000 in a few months in terms of admission, because they were proactively managing that caseload with the patients and the families. So that worked really well. Unfortunately, generally people's workloads are too high and they have to react rather than proactively do things. So where you see proactive management in some areas, it might be sort of patient education, areas like public health, but instead people are having to focus on reacting to situations. So you sort of, you know, it's focusing on pulling people out of the river rather than stopping them jumping in the first place.
I think that that ability comes with experience. It comes with experience. It comes with knowledge. It comes with confidence. And I think that's confidence with a big capital C. Because as, and again, I'm probably tarring a lot of people with the same brush, but in our clinical role, we are normally incredibly confident because this is what we do. We care for people. This is what we do. We are confident in that care. But the ability to adequately, appropriately discuss that with confidence to major stakeholders, the people that ears we actually need to hear what we're doing, comes with time. It comes with experience. It comes with having those people who we can look up to and actually say, this person taught me how to do that. And I think, you know, I was privileged, you know, as I say, when I first started, I had the likes of yourself, I had the likes of Terry Porritt, who supported and guided me through my journey as a clinical nurse specialist. But I'm going to mention that word again, pandemic. It has made a lot of nurses think about their career. It's made a lot of people who are at that point in their career, do I do an extra 5 years or do I take retirement now? And we are losing a lot of highly skilled nurse specialists in a very, very short space of time. And I was at an event just the other day where I looked around and I'm thinking, in 2 or 3 years, at least 50% of these highly skilled people aren't going to be in the profession, you know, and that was 50%. And I'm thinking, there's going to be this void. There is going to be this massive void of people who know how to communicate adequately with confidence to the right people. So that also almost leads me to kind of things of succession planning and how we can share the knowledge from, I'm not saying you're going to be retiring anytime soon, Alice, but you know, how we as clinical nurse specialists, not just as stoma nurses from, you know, from my background, how can we ensure that there is a next generation of clinical nurse specialists who either thinking about nurse specialism now or are, you know, that they've been in it a couple of years and we're thinking about succession planning. Where are we at the moment? Are we in a good place? Is there lots of work to be done? Are you almost thinking, I'm dreading seeing what's happening in the next 5 years? And how do you, you know, whatever that response is, how do you think that can be either corrected or implemented?
One of the issues we're facing is the fact that we don't have enough registered nurses working in healthcare in the NHS. So NHS England a couple of years ago, put the deficit at about 50,000 registered nurses. It's probably, in terms of demand, much higher. And of course, that's the group that clinical nurse specialists come from. And of course, you can't just become a clinical nurse specialist one day after getting a band 5 job. So we've got an underlying issue there about supply of nursing. Now, oddly enough, the UK is not short of nurses. What it's short of is people willing to work in the NHS. So there are nearly, I think, 650,000 registered nurses on the NMC register, but only about half work in the NHS. So we've got an issue with retention. We've got an ageing workforce. We've got issues around, you know, things like Brexit and international supply. So we've got all these underlying issues even before you get to specialist nursing. And then we've got the lack of clarity around specialist nursing. So the millions of job titles, the different types of levels of practice. One of the things we've been working with Health Education England is to define the levels of practice. So we've just developed the enhanced level of practice. Enhanced level practice is a sort of precursor to advanced level practice, or it's somewhere people can stay if they want to, because actually a lot of people out there do not want to be advanced practitioners. So if you want to be a specialist nurse, but you don't particularly want to be a clinical nurse specialist in an advanced practice role, now you can be a specialist nurse, or you can use that opportunity to then develop into being a clinical nurse specialist, so to a more advanced practice role. And there's an apprenticeship now for that. So before, one of the issues we had was people were kind of interested in these jobs, but they weren't going to get the support in terms of education to do them. And it relied very much, if I'm honest, on organisations like the pharmaceutical industry and organisations like Coloplast to support clinical nurse specialist development, which, although I'm very, very grateful they did, isn't really right. We should not be relying on industry to develop the next generation of specialist nurses. But now people will be able to access an apprenticeship where they'll be able to take post-registration, post-qualification, whatever they need, you know, postgraduate diplomas or whatever, to then either become a specialist nurse, well, a nurse in a specialism, or develop into a clinical nurse specialist if they want to.
So are they looking for that to be a registered qualification with the NMC in the same way that advanced nurse practice is?
It isn't. Advanced nurse practice is not a registrable qualification with the NMC. So the only qualifications that are registered with the NMC are some post-registration. So you've got non-medical prescribing, the DNSPQ, so the District Nursing Specialist Practice Qualification, SCIFN, school nursing, public health, you know, health visiting. So there are very few things post-qualification that are NMC registrable, as it were. But the RCN are developing an overarching framework, career framework for nursing. So this will hopefully all be clearer in the next sort of 18 months, 2 years, that where you are on your sort of career trajectory and what kind of support you can expect to develop.
It's really good that work's being done, because I think, going back to the succession planning, I think understandably the priority at the moment is getting Band 5 qualified nurses in, and that later stage, you know, it needs a focus as well, just as much. So whilst we're fixing a short-term problem, hopefully, it's not going to help the long-term where specialist practice and leadership roles come in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we say it's filling a leaky bucket. So you can pour lots of band fives in, you know, from university or whatever, but actually they'll leave in 18 months. You're just making a sort of leaky workforce bucket where the holes are getting bigger. And in safety critical work, you need experienced professionals. So that's why retention is so important.
It's that discussion about retention, which I have with a lot of people. And when I'm talking to the more junior nurses, as you said, the band fives, or the band sixes who award managers within their, you know, within their speciality and those sorts of things.
I find that quite shocking, actually. I cannot believe a ward manager is a band six job.
Yeah, it's...
I know it is. Playing with district nursing, I cannot believe they are band six jobs. You know.
And I think that's it. That's exactly it. Now you look at the discrepancies, and again, I think I've read lots of things from yourself and from Terry, and there's loads of things in the press as well. You know, it's when you mention the word job description, and you know they try to do this all encompassing job description. So a band six will do this. A band seven will do this, and you look nationally, you know, again, from a stoma point of view, I look at what some band sevens in one trust does is completely different. And they would almost be, you know, band sixes or, you know, and then other ones where they're a band seven, but they're almost doing the role of what other trusts are having band eight Bs doing. And there is this discrepancy across the whole of the UK, whether you're talking Ireland, Scotland, Wales, doesn't matter. There is this discrepancy of what people are expected to do. And I'm going to ask you, it's going to sound a simple question. You're going to go, no, it's going to probably going to be the answer. But is there a solution?
Yeah.
No.
So in the UK, across all four countries, we have a Gender for Change, the Knowledge and Skills Framework, which actually lots of people are very critical of it, but actually isn't that bad as a way of looking at work. So there are several gateways in AFC. And what you can ask for, particularly if you're a member of the RCN, is to be job matched. So if you are working, if you're being paid a band six and you're doing an eight job, you can ask for your work to be job matched. And you can just ask for that from your own organisation anyway. One of the good things about Agenda for Change, actually, was it realised that people did change and did take on extra responsibility over time. But the problem is people don't use it. And Agenda for Change is very poorly implemented in lots of places. So there's things like freedom to act in Agenda for Change. And most people that do this sort of work have great freedom to act. They make lots of clinical decisions. So that's one of the things that sort of bumps up the points, as it were, in the job matching. So I would say, actually, if you are what we call overperforming for what you're being paid, get job matching under AFC. Ask for job matching.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you said, you know, again, because I've heard of job matching, but it's never been something that I've kind of really looked into. So do you find you have many people who go, job matching, what's that?
Yeah, pretty much everybody. So people don't use it and they don't know it exists. But you can either do it through your union, you know, if people are in unison or whatever, they'll help with job matching. But that sort of makes an employment thing. If people are in the RCN, it's done as a sort of Royal College thing. You know, it's a service that the college can offer. So it's worth doing, because it's particularly good, actually, if you can get a few colleagues together and do it together. If you've got a specialist nurse in respiratory and you're all being paid a six and you're all working at an 8A.
That's it. I remember when it was implemented, and I remember our continence service, we did it as a team, and the process came out putting us at different levels. So we then used the matching process to get consistency for all of us. But I didn't realise you could do it at a later date and ask for a review.
Yeah, you can continue to do it, because the point of it was that you could go through these gateways and people don't really use it.
So we always say in these Colplast Professional podcasts, we always say that, you know, you can have a bit of a soapbox. So, you know, we always say this is your voice. This is your time. So over to you, Professor Alison Leary. In relation to the topics that we've discussed already, is there anything that you would just like to almost really make vocal and say, please do this, please don't do this. Really, the next few minutes is all yours.
I guess the important thing is don't oversimplify what you do. Don't fall into that trap. Nursing is a female workforce, generally, 89% female, and women tend to feel uncomfortable about talking about their achievements, but it's really important that you do. And if you can't, if you don't feel comfortable claiming your achievements, then talk up your colleagues' work and get them to talk yours up, because that's a perhaps more comfortable way of doing it. Don't let people make assumptions about what you do. If people are making assumptions about what you do, challenge them. I think nurses are quite often a bit frightened of challenging people. So Suzanne Gordon, who's a journalist that writes about nursing, says that nurses sort of equate being popular with being respected, and it's not always the same thing. Sometimes to be respected, you have to say things that are perhaps not comfortable for people to hear, and we have to be okay with that. The other thing is to articulate the complexity of your work and the risk that you manage for your organisation and for patients. And that's where the safety critical aspect of your work is. So have a think about that and have a think about risk that you manage every day that you probably don't realise you're managing.
Perfect. And I think, you know, it's that managing risk. Nurses, we just don't like saying what we're good at and what we do well. And I think we need to encourage and support that change in mindset to say, do you know what? Together we are stronger. And I really love the way that you said, you know, if you don't think you can big yourself up, big your colleagues up. You sing their praises, they're going to sing yours, and we are stronger together as a, you know, whether it's department, whether it is, you know, a trust, it's together as a profession. We are so much stronger together and working together, supporting each other like we have done through the last couple of years. I think we just need to keep that positivity going, keep that support going, and support each other through the next 5 years and beyond. Karen, anything else from yourself?
I've just written so many notes in the course of this conversation. There's just so many things that have stood out to me. Thank you, Alison. Just so many things that we can, you know, go away and think about. And I always find you articulate the obvious, but in a way that we've never thought about it before. And I think we need to go back to Florence, that we're vigilant. We need to follow that example and consider that risk, you know, the complex things that nurses do manage.
Yes, and be okay with owning it.
Well, Alison, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Please don't retire anytime soon. We need you. We need you around for at least another 15, 20 years. Okay, so
you're not allowed. I'll definitely be retiring then.
You're not allowed to go anywhere. So on behalf of all the listeners, on behalf of myself, Karen, Coloplast Professional, it's been a pleasure. It's been a privilege, as always. And we look forward to talking to you and hearing from you again soon.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.